I'm Brandi Cruz, today on Undivided. Some Washington schools are gearing up to honor Black Lives Matter Week next week. We'll tell you what parents should expect. Plus, a school superintendent is the prime suspect in the theft of yard signs. We'll tell you all the sordid details. And a natural gas ban bill gets even worse. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I need to see that commitment in action tomorrow. I need you down in Olympia joining us on the steps of the Washington State Capitol at 3:30 p.m. to urge lawmakers to give six common sense initiatives hearings in Olympia. Here's why this is so important. I know it's the middle of the week. I know it's 3:30 p.m. I know you guys work hard. I know it's hard to get away. But Democrats in Olympia have painted these initiatives as the work of one rich guy who just wants to buy his way onto the ballot. We need to be there in great numbers to show them that that's not just about one man, that it is about the 800,000 plus Washingtonians who signed their name to at least one of these six initiatives because they're crushed under the weight of taxes, because they're not happy with the state of public safety, because common sense dictates the state of public safety is terrible, because they don't want money coming out of their paychecks for a long-term care program that they're never going to use. So being there in as big a numbers as we can muster in the middle of an afternoon on a Wednesday is absolutely critical to send that message to lawmakers. And we're not going to let them hide behind this excuse anymore that, oh, this is rich Brian Haywood who spent $6 million to eliminate the tax on capital gains. Look, Brian Haywood made those initiatives possible. You made them successful. And so did more than 800,000 other Washingtonians. So please join us on the steps of the state capitol tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. We'll talk about that a little more at the end of the show. Help each other with rides if you need them. Let's get every single person we can down there to send a message to our elected leaders who are supposed to be serving us. All right. Bolo, be on the lookout for Black Lives Matter Week in our public schools next week. So this is born out of, obviously, the BLM movement, but it is sort of a subsidiary of that. So out of the BLM movement, there's something specifically called the National Black Lives Matter at School Week. And what they say their stated mission is as follows. We lead with the heart and courageously work to address racial injustice in education, embodying Black joy, confronting anti-Blackness, and building authentic partnerships with all who support creating equitable school communities across the nation. And it says National Black Lives Matter at School, organizing for racial justice in schools. So there are some schools who are planning to have activities and educational, I'm going to use the phrase educational loosely, activities and educational opportunities around Black Lives Matter at school. So the BOLO part of it is you need to, if you're not sure if your kid's school is recognizing Black Lives Matter at School Week and you have some concerns about what they might be teaching, probably a good time to ask your school's principal. In the Shoreline School District, they did put out a bulletin to families, which, look, if you're going to teach activism in school, I at least will give you a couple points for telling parents about it ahead of time and letting parents know what you're going to be doing. So again, it's from the Shoreline Public Schools. It says, Black Lives Matter at School, Background Information and Family Guide 2024. I'm not going to read that whole thing for you, but I will pull out a couple things that are of note. It says, policies that affirm equity. Our school district has clear policies affirming equity and opposing any form of discrimination. And then it refers to a policy. It says, commits our district to provide respectful and relevant learning environments that leverage diversity and create schools where students feel welcomed and supported. It is in this spirit that the lessons are presented for teacher use. It says, ensuring academic freedom while teaching controversial subjects. Teaching about social justice in our current political climate is not always easy. I would argue you shouldn't be teaching about social justice at all, even if it is in the interest of historically underserved students. However, educators in the U.S. have the right to teach and discuss issues that are a part of civil life and society, including racism and equity. Okay, this is about the rights of teachers to push their political agenda on kids. Got it. And Well, I'll get back to that in a second. I was going to say, it's not about, of course, everybody's opposed to racism. I mean, yeah, if there's been issues related to racism in our nation's history, there's no, nobody has a problem with teaching those things. But you're talking about a racism and equity agenda built by a political organization that you're utilizing in schools. It says both district policy and the board resolution clarify that teachers have academic freedom to have these conversations. Oh, great. Let's give the teachers a bunch of rope to decide how to teach BLM in schools. We affirm our belief that the integration and addition of ethnic studies into the education of Shoreline School District students can have positive impacts on eliminating opportunity gaps. And then it has some guidelines for teachers while discussing societal issues to avoid any appearance of the imposition imposition of views and opinions on students. Like, go ahead and impose your opinions and views, but we need to make sure that it doesn't come across that way. Acknowledge opposing views, clearly identify a teacher's opinion as just that, and present factual information. While acknowledging an opposing view, if a lesson is on an equity theme, it does not mean that equal time must be given to views in opposition to equity. The contrasting views instead should be used to provide full information for students. Interesting. Okay. I'm trying to make sense of that one. It's basically like, hey, teachers, you know, give your opinion to students, let them know that it's your opinion, and then you don't actually have to oppose or have to, like, put forth the other side of what's wrong with the equity debate, because in their eyes, that's probably like, oh, here's what white supremacists have to say about equity, which I don't want teachers to explain that either, because there are some legitimate, obviously, arguments against equity versus equality. We talk about them on the show all the time, but God forbid that they have that kind of nuanced conversation with their students. So, yeah, this isn't setting up Shoreline teachers to turn their kids into activists for BLM and push their personal agenda on kids. Not at all. No surprise, the Olympia School District has issued a proclamation about next week's Black Lives Matter in School Week. It says, be it further resolved that the board calls on all district staff to teach with the resources and engage in professional learning grounded in the 13 guiding principles of Black Lives Matter at school. The board encourages educators, students, families, and staff to incorporate the 13 guiding principles of Black Lives Matter at school into their decisions about race and privilege all year long by teaching Black Lives Matter lessons aligned with Washington State learning standards to realize Olympia School District's student outcome, which states our students will have the skills, knowledge, and courage to identify and confront personal, systemic, and societal bias. Okay, so it says we need to handle next week based on the 13 guiding principles of Black Lives Matter at school. Nicole, you
and
got the 13.
And obviously it gives an impression that this is all Black Lives Matter related, right?
It sure does. Mm-hmm, so let's see. Black Lives Matter 13 guiding principles. Let's take a look at what that is. Principle number one, restorative justice. We intentionally build and nurture a beloved community that is bonded together through a beautiful struggle that is restorative, not depleting. Another principle, diversity, empathy. I like empathy. Empathy is good. Mm-hmm. Loving engagement, queer affirming. Okay. So now you're venturing into the gender ideology on top of it. We foster a queer-affirming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather the belief that all in the world are heterosexual unless she or he disclose otherwise. Transgender-affirming is the sixth principle. We are self-reflective and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift Black trans folks, especially Black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence. We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead. Got it. Okay, let's see. Another
I would skip down to 13. Black villages. That's a good one.
Black. So it's, well, I'm going to read them all quick.
Okay.
Unapologetically Black, Black women, Black families, Black villages. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children, to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable. Western prescribed nuclear family.
Yeah,
so, I mean, isn't that what the quote unquote conspiracy theorists say about schools is like the goal of all of this is to disrupt the nuclear family. And here we're celebrating Black Lives Matter at School Week next week and saying we need to do this based on the 13 principles. And one of the 13 principles is Black villages where they say we disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. Gotcha. And then globalism. I mean, we're going way outside the realm of, hey, let's respect, and for kids, this all boils down to, hey, you need to respect people no matter what their skin color is. Easy. Mm-hmm. Like, let's make sure kids aren't being little racists. Easy. But no, you're talking about transgenderism, queer affirming, and globalism. We see ourselves as part of the global Black family, and we are aware of the different ways we are impacted or privileged as Black people who exist in different parts of the world. This is all so exhausting. Oh, to be a parent in 2024 in Washington State or elsewhere in the country. Just wild. Okay, let's see. Also, there was in the Olympia School District, there was also, we talked about this previously, and I want to say there was maybe a lawsuit about it, when the Olympia School District for elementary school kids started these BIPOC clubs where it gave safe spaces to students of color away from white kids. So basically teaching them to be racist against white kids. Like, you're not safe around your white classmates. The exact opposite of what you are trying to tell us that you want to achieve here. And so in the Olympia School District, it's like they don't learn from any of this stuff.
No.
They don't. They genuinely do not care. Mm-hmm. Like, there can be story after story after story about things that are just demonstrably ridiculous, racist, whatever it is. They do not care. Like, they are set on this. And until there's some sort of substantial change on the school board, this is going to continue. So it says there's a BIPOC lunch club for elementary.
Uh-huh.
So, don't eat next to the little white Tommy. You know, he's just a little racist and you're not safe around him. And it actually says, and it acknowledges in here, some of the, and what is this from, Nicole? Where'd you pull this from?
This was sent out, Alicia.
Alicia, yeah.
Alicia sent it to me, but this was sent out to the students. So this is a student-ran lunch. And then the other was given to staff.
Yeah. So one of them is, well, this one, the BIPOC lunch club for elementary. Some of you may remember in February 2023, the media covered OSD clubs groups for elementary students on the basis of race. And Alicia, this is from Alicia's writing, right? And she points out, like, that's a violation of federal law, state law, yeah, and Civil Rights Act. And the district admitted in an internal email that those clubs weren't appropriate. Now they're just doing them again. So now it's like, oh, lunch club. The other one, OSD Educators of Color Network, building a community for educators of color in the Olympia School District. And so it has all these dates where they're going to have meetings for certified staff based on skin
and
color.
That one was sent to Alicia by a staff member who was sent that, as in teacher of color that was sent that and encouraged to go, like, that person needs to go, and felt like that was ridiculous and they were singled out because of their color, and upset about it.
Will a white teacher please sue? Will a white teacher please have the cojones to sue over this stuff? So you have people, teachers who are getting extra sort of professional development from a public school district because of the pigmentation of their skin. And we're supposed to believe that's in the name of, you know, race and social justice or whatever it is, and equality. That's absurd. Will the parent of a white kid please sue? Will you please sue the Olympia School District over these BIPOC lunch clubs? I mean, come on. When is enough is enough? When is enough enough? What are you teaching our kids? It's wild stuff. And then this stuff is from the top down, this highly ideologically motivated agenda. And allow me to give you a prime example of why it's from the top down. I want to take you to the North Kitsap School District, where the superintendent is the prime suspect in the theft of political yard signs. This story is wild. So this is from the Kitsap Sun. It was funny. We were getting a couple emails about this, and then we saw the story out from the Kitsap Sun this morning. We're like, I gotta talk about that today. The headline, North Kitsap Schools Superintendent Contacted in Investigation of Stolen Campaign Signs. So the campaign signs in question have to do with a vote on a bond measure that's coming up pretty quickly in just a couple weeks. So it says, North Kitsap School District Superintendent Lauren Evans was contacted by law enforcement Friday morning as part of an investigation into the theft and disposal of signs opposed to the district's upcoming bond measure. The incident began when two opponents of the ballot measure for a $242 million bond observed an individual taking signs from the side of Little Boston Road early Friday morning. The bond is up for election on February 13th and would rebuild Pearson Elementary School and Wolf Elementary School, among other projects around the district. It is the first bond proposed by the North Kitsap School District in 23 years. Scott Hendon, a former North Kitsap School Board member who helped craft the against committee argument in local voters' pamphlets and is part of a citizen committee opposed to the bond, said that he and a fellow committee member, Kim Gerlach, were witnesses to the theft, which involved what he characterized as a blonde gal in her 50s. Huh, blonde gal in her 50s. Nicole, what does the superintendent in the North Kitsap School District look like? Oh, blonde gal, roughly in her 50s. Although if I were her, I'd kind of be offended by that characterization. She looks like she's in her 40s to me.
Meh.
Who knows?
I would say about late 40s, early 50s.
Huh. So let's see. Okay, there's a lot of blonde gals out there, though. So maybe, you know, it's not her. Let's not jump to conclusions here. Let's keep reading on. Hendon told the Kitsap Sun that his committee's signs, some reading vote no on the NKSD bond, have been disappearing frequently, leading him to use outdoor trail and game cameras, which take photos based on motion detection. Images captured on those cameras led Hendon and Gerlach to stake out a location on Little Boston Road in Kingston on Friday morning, where two anti-bond signs were located. So now we've got cameras. We've got a stakeout looking for the mystery blonde lady who's maybe been taking their signs. After Hendon arrived at the location around 6:10 a.m. Friday morning, he took cover behind some bushes. This is glorious. We need to get this guy on. Shortly after, Hendon saw a grayish Ford pickup truck slow down and stop. Around 6:30 a.m., a woman exited the vehicle, pulled the signs out of the ground, put them in the back of the truck, and then drove off. Hendon then made a phone call to Gerlach, who was parked in her car off Eglin Road. Oh, wow, so they've got a multi-pronged stakeout, guy behind the bushes, in a truck, ready to take off after the perpetrator. Let's read on, shall we? Hoping to identify the driver, Gerlach began to follow the truck southbound on Haynesville Road and onto Bond Road toward Polsbo. At a stoplight, Gerlach took a photo of the truck's license plate. Later, Gerlach said the truck left Bond and briefly stopped on Stottlemyre Road. I love this reporting from the Kitsap Sun. It's so detailed. At that point, Hendon called 911 to file a report. Two Polsbo police officers initially met with Hendon and Gerlach in the Sons of Norway parking lot before they contacted the Kitsap County Sheriff's Office, since the report originated outside Polsbo city limits. The Kitsap County Sheriff's Office sent multiple deputies to the scene and to a site on Stottlemyre Road identified by Gerlach. At one point, a King County Sheriff's Office deputy asked Gerlach if the bond signs had grease on them. Gerlach noted that Hendon had used grease on the signs, hoping they'd be a theft deterrent. What the deputy told Gerlach next came as a surprise. He said, quote, "I've got grease on my uniform. I picked up the signs on Stottlemyre where you said she pulled over." So they have contacted the school superintendent, correct, who has a vehicle that matches the description of the vehicle used to pull the signs out of the ground and toss them in. She matches the physical description.
Her truck matches
the truck
description.
Belongs to her. So is it any wonder that we have these ideologically driven school districts when you have allegedly the superintendent of the Kitsap, North Kitsap School District, going around in the wee hours of the morning, allegedly ripping out signs that oppose a bond that she supports? That is the kind of stuff you have to resign over.
I cannot imagine a good excuse. I mean, they have a license plate. They have nothing that I believe could clear her at this point.
Yeah, no, she allegedly did this.
And that is not okay.
No, that is not okay. That's ridiculous. It sets a poor example for students. Not that you care. It sets a poor example for students and for teachers and for discourse and for the community. Absolutely ridiculous.
Can we add this to our initiative about intimidating?
Yeah, right. Well, this is already against the law.
I know.
It's already against the law to pull out a yard sign. I love, can we please reach out to this guy, Scott Hendon?
Yes.
Because, and who else was he with? Hold on. Scott Hendon
and
Kim Gerlach.
Yeah, a member
The setup there, it's so funny because, like, it's like the hunt, you know? They've got the game cameras up. They're going to catch images, which mean they probably have the images on the game cameras.
Oh, yeah.
They hide behind a bush. Then you've got the car that's going to pursue and take vehicles. I love it. I love it so much. And this superintendent, how dumb can you be, allegedly?
Also, do you think that this would happen in King County or even Pierce County, who I love, but they're so busy with all of these other things. They actually got local police and
the sheriff's office. Kudos to the Polesville Police Department and the Kitsap County Sheriff's Office for taking it seriously.
Yes.
And for going out, retrieving the signs, putting the evidence together, all of that stuff. Love it. But any wonder in the world why our schools are so ideologically driven. So we will be following up on this story. We want justice for the vote no on the NKSD school bond, folks. And honestly, I don't know much about the necessity for the bond out there or whatever the argument is. But now I'm inclined to tell people to vote no because some crazy superintendent, allegedly, really wants you to vote yes. So wild stuff. Any wonder in the world. All right, coming up next, we have mentioned this effort in Olympia right now to ban natural gas. So if you've got a gas stove, if you've got a gas fireplace, they want to take that away from you. Well, there was a House version of the bill that was passed, and now in the Senate, it's been altered, but I would argue it's even worse for people who have gas in their homes right now. So Jan Heimbaugh with the Building Industry Association of Washington will be joining us coming up next. First Mark Insurance, I've been preaching First Mark Insurance because for me, if you're trying to save money, as an example, on your insurance, if you need better insurance, which was the case for Mike and I, one of the wonderful things about the First Mark Challenge is you're going to learn a lot about your insurance needs. Maybe you've even got some insurance right now that it just isn't suited for your needs. You're going to learn a lot about your current insurance, and then you're also going to have the experts at First Mark Insurance, a local company that's been doing this for a long time. They're going to go out. They're going to shop the market for you based on your needs, based on your budget. They're going to come back to you totally free of charge, make a recommendation, and you can decide whether you want to move your insurance over to First Mark and have them handle it moving forward. That's what Mike and I did. We've now been members of the First Mark family for about a year. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, also said now is a really good time to have an insurance broker on your side, because in this market, gosh, you could file a tiny little claim and they could drop you.
We could have a client come to us today that maybe just had a comp loss, so like a windshield loss,
sure,
right, just a little ding in your windshield, and they come in and we don't have a carrier that will take them
for a ding in their windshield,
right? For a ding in the windshield, right? And this is changing, right? So we have some carriers that are starting to loosen up already, but it's just, I'm just saying, there's never been a better time to be a broker, because you need multiple carriers to find solutions for your clients these days. You can't just have one carrier because they might not want your client.
Yeah, don't navigate the market yourself. You need insurance anyway. Why deal with it on your own when you can have a company like First Mark in your corner that you never pay for their services? So again, it really is a no-brainer. Take the First Mark Challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. It just takes about an hour of your time. It's going to save you so much time on the back end moving forward. So firstmarkinsurance.com, they work for you. They're coming after your natural gas. You can pry my gas stove out of my cold, dead hands. I mean, I'm not going to be that extreme about it. But seriously, I mean, we use our gas line for not only, first of all, I mean, gas stoves are just superior. Like, I'm not going to sit there and wait forever for my water to boil. But then also we have our gas line out connected to our grill and all this stuff. And it's like, okay, you want to transition away from it. But what does that look like? So there's this bill, HB 1589, that actually passed through the House and it's over on the Senate side. And it's going to have a hearing tomorrow morning. But the version of it that the Senate is considering, they're making it sound like, oh, they made positive changes to the bill that isn't going to phase out natural gas if you get it from PSE by 2030. But it actually, I think, makes the bill worse in that it provides those of you who have gas in your home less predictability in the long run. So we asked Jan Heimbaugh with the Building Industry Association of Washington to come back on, because we had her on the show last week to talk about this bill and explain some of the changes and where this potential gas ban stands. Jan Heimbaugh, welcome back.
Good to be back, Brandy.
Yeah, so explain the current state of things. So the House passed a version of this that was already bad. Explain what that did. And now there's a version that'll be heard tomorrow in a Senate committee that is arguably worse.
Absolutely. So what the House passed last week on this natural gas ban, 1589, this bill, is it said it turned off new connections for Puget Sound Energy customers for natural gas as of summertime of 2023. It was a bill from last year, so the dates are all kind of wonky there. So no new connections after June of 2023. And also, Puget Sound Energy would have to cut service to current users by 2030, which in sort of adult timeline, that feels like tomorrow. So the Senate is hearing tomorrow at 8 a.m. Wednesday morning in the Energy, Environment, and Telecommunications Committee a substitute bill on 1589. They're proposing this substitute, which in our view is almost worse. It doesn't turn off new connections. It just changes the obligation to serve for this utility, which is they're obligated to serve electricity or natural gas as a customer requests it according to the UTC. They're obligated to do this because in state statute, they are obligated to make a profit. So they have to serve, it's like trash service. Like you get this territory, you have to use that. That's a utility situation. The changing the duty to, or the definition of obligation to serve to means that they can ban gas or just decide not to serve it, because now it says basically to heat and energy or other stuff that's renewable. It doesn't have to be natural gas. So they can say, okay, community that has natural gas now and your businesses and your restaurants and your homes, we've decided it doesn't make us financial sense for us to get the most profit, not just a profit, but the most profit. We get to turn you off with, you know, probably a little bit of notice, but there's no assistance for transferring, moving your building or your house from natural gas water heater to an electric water heater or a business or a restaurant. You're just going to be all of a sudden like, hey, now I don't get this service that I built my house around or I built my business around. But, you know, because they've decided it doesn't make financial sense for them to make the most money on decarbonization that they can.
Yeah, I guess as a homeowner, we have, you know, a gas fireplace, we have a gas stove. I actually would prefer the house version that at least you're telling me exactly when it's going to end. At least I can plan for that. In this version, it's like, oh, what is it? The Utilities and Transportation Commission who would decide how much notice would need to be given if PSC wants to stop serving existing gas customers?
Yeah, I'm not really quite sure. But in order to do rate, you know, the Utility and Transformation or Transportation Commission, the UTC is sort of the, you know, us dork nerds know it as. Every utility in the state has to get their rates approved and sort of planning approved by this commission. It's sort of the public interest in theory to protect ratepayers and but still balance the need for these companies to make a profit. So the UTC does have a political goal here as well and a policy goal here to turn off natural gas because it's a, you know, carbon dirty fuel now. It didn't used to be, but apparently it is now. So they want natural gas to go away. They've been supportive of this bill. So all PSC will have to do is sort of show some numbers to the UTC. The UTC will approve that, or the UTC will say, hey, you no longer have to serve natural gas because you can use these sources of power for these homes or these businesses instead. So let's start decommissioning. And I don't know, there's no sort of real outline of how that notice happens, how they assist customers. Rates will go up because all electric consumers will now be paying for the decommissioning of the natural gas system as well. So every ratepayer in their service territories, rates are going to go up to do this as well. And even if you're not getting natural gas today.
Yeah. So Mike and I, we would have to get a new stove and a new fireplace if we want to continue to use them.
And I'm guessing a water heater.
And a water heater. Great. Okay.
Yep. And then and a furnace. And yeah. And then you have to do the, you know, not all homes are equipped to just plug and play electric versions of those things. So sometimes you've got to redo, you know, the inside guts in your walls. And like, it's more than just the appliance costs. It's probably a $40,000 on average sort of internal upgrade. And that doesn't include, that's like wiring. That doesn't include appliances.
Yeah. And then really quick, how does that impact the building industry?
Well, it's, you know, not great. It's not great for current homeowners. Changing the obligation to serve is not great for new homeowners. And as we build properties that people would like to have a gas stove, would like to have a fireplace, these options that, you know, have been widely available because we live in America, sort of like heat and power and great things that we like. So it's not great. It's really damaging and it's really electricity. All electric homes are not particularly efficient. So your power rates are going to go up and, you know, like it's more expensive to build these things. It's more expensive to build an all electric home for us at the moment. And look, there's innovations going on efficiency and building a better house for people. We're working on that. We've got a lot of members who are on the cutting edge of that stuff, but let's like be reasonable and rational about this and make sure that we can keep people, you know, warm in the winter, cool in the summer, and having food on the tables. Because that's what this is about.
Reason and rationality doesn't even factor into the equation. And that's, you know, right. What I'm going to do when our electricity goes out? We're going to fire up our gas generator and we're going to have to power our home that way. It's really ridiculous stuff. Jan, thank you for the update. A little call to action for folks. Can they testify at this hearing on Wednesday? Can you give them some details?
Yes, you could absolutely testify. And or if you don't want to testify, because I think there's going to be a lot of folks, but please do, you can sign in and register your opposition to this bill. I can send you the link so you can have it in your information. They can register to just log in their opposition. Or if they would like to, they can select testify, and you can do it remotely in the legislature now. It's probably the one good thing about COVID that happened is remote testimony is now widely available in the legislature. So you can do it from your hotel room, for instance.
Just like you. All right, Jan, yes, exactly. Please do send that link. We'll put it in the live show comments. So thank you very much for keeping us updated. Awesome.
Thank you, Brandy. Have a good one.
Says Jan Heinbaugh with the Building Industry Association of Washington. I appreciate her tracking this. Obviously, the BIAW has an interest in this particular bill, but I would argue any of us who have any gas appliances or anything have an interest in what I would like members of that committee to ask the bill's sponsor during this hearing tomorrow is, how do you suggest people pay for this? How do you suggest homeowners cover the expenses associated with you banning natural gas, or in this case, telling PSE basically they can carte blanche stop serving existing customers natural gas at a whim? And I'm sure they'll give some notice. I don't anticipate PSE just pulling the plug one day and then everybody's screwed. I think you're going to have hopefully ample notice attached to that. But that doesn't mean that people can just out of nowhere have the money to be able to transition to get new appliances, et cetera. So that's the question that needs to be asked. How do you expect working class people who are already suffering under the weight of all the taxes that you come up with on any given year, how do you expect them to pay for this? And let's see if they have a rational answer to that question. I will put in the comments for today's episode the links to both testify if you would want to do that, or just to sign in opposed. And that is important because you basically have a count of who's in favor and who's opposed. And it's nice to, on these bills, see a pretty good count of people who are opposed to a dumb bill like this. Put some more thought into it. And this is what we've seen on the environmental front from people who, gosh, maybe they have good intentions, but you are creating these goals that end up costing, you know, you and I a lot of money. We don't see anything, any improvements as a result of these climate goals that you set. And so it's like, is the only way they can come up with to help the environment are the only ideas they have ideas that hurt working class people? It's like, are you serious? You can't come up with any other ideas besides like taxing, increasing costs for us. And that's something they've got to start thinking about more if they want to be taken seriously. Okay, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, a repeat sexual offender now has 4 open cases in King County. And it is yet another example of how the system is not looking out for crime victims. First, we've been talking to our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com about what his expectations are for the real estate market in 2024. If you're looking to sell your home, it is never too early to get in touch with Wes and his team. He's going to give you a free market analysis and take a look at whether any updates need to be made to your home. And it's also good to get a jump start because the Fed is indicating it's going to drop interest rates, and that's when you're going to really see the market heat up. Where do you think interest rates need to be at to really get the market back up and humming again?
I think if we get into the high fives, that is going to be a real breakthrough. You know, when we were at 7 and now into the high sixes, that brought in another section of buyers. And if we get that into the low sixes or high fives, I think things will really start to move again. And, you know, we're already seeing multiple offers in a lot of different price points and, you know, different cities. It's going to make housing more affordable, and it's going to bring more buyers out into the market again. What's that going to do? It's going to push the prices back up. So one of the things that I do see happening, or could see happening in 2024, is all of the gains that we lost in 2022, I think there's a really good chance we make those up in 2024.
Yeah, and you want to be ready to take advantage of that because there's so much pent-up buyer demand. Man, can you imagine those rates drop and you've already got your home ready to hit the market because you contacted Wes and his team well in advance. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Reach out to him, ask him about that free market analysis, and you can start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. All right, we have an example, yet another example in King County of how our system is not protecting victims. Our system is not working on behalf of victims. It is at every turn giving the benefit of the doubt to accused criminals. That is the case in a case against a man named Perry Strom. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. This is a scenario that just is all too familiar for crime victims. They have a perpetrator who is arrested, goes before a judge. I mean, how many times have we seen this? They show up, they beg a judge to set the bail high. They're scared of this person. They're scared of him getting out. The seriousness of the crime warrants a high bail. And then you have judges who set a bail so low that that potentially violent individual, accused violent offender, can just get right out and go back to doing what they were doing. And it is a system that's letting down victims. So I want to introduce you to a man named Perry Strom. Perry Strom, and I'm going to give Cairo 7 News so much credit on this story. We're going to play a clip of their wonderful investigative report on this. Perry Strom was just booked into jail on Thursday night for 12 felonies. And this comes a year after he was in front of a judge charged with rape, and his victims pleaded with the judge to keep him behind bars. He didn't. So now he's out throughout that year, back in jail, accused of 12 felony crimes. Here's the Cairo 7 report.
A King County judge approved the state's request for Perry Strom's high bail. He was booked into jail on 12 felonies, all involving sexually abusing or raping a child. This is now the fourth open case in King County against Strom.
To bash in my roommate's teeth in October, and then we see he has 12 felony charges for commercial sex abuse of a minor, rape, and sex with a minor. Like, that's absurd.
Strom was convicted of stalking Jasmine and served a 20-day sentence. She and other alleged victims pleaded with the judge last February to not lower his $125,000 bail or even grant him bail in the open rape case. The judge didn't lower the number, but Strom still made bond.
I don't understand how he is able to continue to get bail as an offer post-bail and not face any repercussion. I'm so angry. It's hard in our society, even though we live in a very progressive state, knowing at the end of the day, women are not heard, women are not believed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that person's politics are, but I think that recognition that's like, hey, we're in a progressive society and we went through the whole Me Too movement and believe women and respect women. And how many stories have we done about women victims? I mean, I think it was the Kitsap case where you had a guy who was accused of raping 4 women. He got a slap on the wrist sentence. I believe he's already out of jail. We had the case down in Pierce County with a man who murdered his estranged girlfriend, and he was given, thankfully, a judge rejected it, but prosecutors offered him up a sweetheart plea deal. And it's like, what message does that send? And here you have someone who was in court a year ago, accused of rape. And now, you know, they get out, first of all, for rape, $125,000 bail is nothing. And then look at all the potential new victims that have, you know, been victimized because we didn't take that sort of case seriously. Now there are 4 open cases against this guy in King County. 4 open cases. And it sounds like the judge this time around, when he walks in there on 12 felonies, did set the bail high, but it was a year too late. And look, I understand that there is a constitutional right to bail, 100%. But when you have someone like this, and when you have a case like rape, and you set a bail where, gosh, so it's 10% or something, or someone can get out, I mean, what message are you sending? And who's there to protect the victims? It's just not justice. And now we have, it says, 4th open case in King County against Strom. 2 of the other 3 involve sex abuse as well. So here you have a pattern of behavior. In the 3rd open case, a previous victim who pushed to keep him in custody alleged he called and threatened to kill her roommate. So this is a sort of person where, and this is where we're seeing, I think, a huge meltdown, is the kind of repeat offenders, where you know the pattern of behavior. You know what this person is capable of. And a decision by a judge to keep bail low, in my estimation, is like a green light for that person to continue to offend. And it's unbelievable. And I don't think there's anything else to believe for victims in this system other than the system's not working for you. It is working for offenders, and I truly believe that more than ever. All right, coming up next, we're going to get to a couple national stories. E. Jean Carroll, who just got like, what, an $83 million judgment against Donald Trump, told Rachel Maddow how she plans to spend that money. And as Megyn Kelly said on Twitter, it is clips like this that will get Donald Trump reelected. So we'll play it for you coming up next. First, it is interesting time right now. Certainly politically, there's a lot of global unrest. And if you're saving for retirement, gearing up for retirement, it's really important to look at what's happening nationally and globally and take that into consideration to manage your risk on your retirement portfolio. You only get one retirement. It's important to protect it and to have someone who's actively managing your risk. And that's why I suggest having a free Know Your Risk radio review with Zach Abraham, the Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk radio podcast. We have him on the show pretty frequently. And he has all sorts of great advice. You know, we looked at the tax structure and the tax system that we're facing in this state, which his clients obviously complain about all the time. And Zach is of the same belief I am, that I think they're just trying to tax you to death until you give in and you agree to an income tax.
The Washington state legislature, I'm sure that they'd love to have a state income tax, a state cap gains tax. They'd try to do it all. But another part of me is thinking that they're going to try to get as onerous and as, you know, confiscatory as they can possibly get on all things tax related, almost in an effort to create pain to get us to switch to an income tax.
Yep.
Right. Like, so,
yep.
So, hey, here, well, you know what? We can get rid of all these other taxes you guys don't like. Let's just replace it with an income tax. Like, I don't know, Brandy, you'd be more in the know, but that's what it feels like to me that they're doing, you know, it's highway robbery.
I agree. Highway robbery, indeed. And Zach joins us on the show every Thursday. Try Bulwark Capital's Know Your Risk portfolio review. It's a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk in our market. There's no obligation. In fact, Bulwark doesn't let anyone invest with them at their first meeting. So they want you to mull on what they went over with you and come back to them if you choose. So whether you become a client or not, you will leave much more informed about the risk to your retirement. So schedule your risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State, E. Jean Carroll. I agree with Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly posted this clip of E. Jean Carroll, who of course sued Donald Trump, accusing him of sexual assault. She got an $83 million judgment. So she goes on Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. And Rachel Maddow asked what I thought was a pretty good question. And I got to say, E. Jean Carroll not only embarrassed herself with this answer, and you'll see she's sitting next to her attorney who is visibly uncomfortable and tries to sort of play it off as a joke, but it also just plays into this hand that Donald Trump has been saying that he's just been the target of all of these things, that this is just to destroy his life and to destroy his chances of being president. So here's the clip.
You've talked about using some of Trump's money you're about to get to help shore up women's rights. Do you know what that might be, what that might look like?
Yes, Rachel. Yes.
Tell me.
I had such great ideas for all the good I'm going to do with this money. First thing, Rachel, you and I are going to go shopping. We're going to get completely new wardrobes, new shoes, motorcycle for Crowley, new fishing rod for Robbie. Rachel, what do you want? Penthouse? It's yours,
nothing.
Rachel. Penthouse and France? You want France? You want to go fishing
nope.
in France? No? Oh. All right. Okay.
That's a joke.
Although if me fishing in France could do something for women's rights, I would take the hit. You know, I would obviously take one for the team.
All right, let me.
as if you need persuasion in that regard. Let me finish with a final question.
Yeah. Now look, it's her money. She can spend it however she wants. But to respond to that legitimate question about, hey, are you going to help this? Are you going to spend this money to help other women who went through what you say you went through, whatever it is? And she's like, I'm going to buy shoes. And Rachel Maddow, do you want a penthouse? You want to go fishing in France? We could buy France. It just plays into Donald Trump's hands. That's all it does. I totally agree with Megyn Kelly on that, is that it adds fuel to the fire of, and I do believe that Trump has been subjected to, not necessarily in this case, but when you look in totality. I mean, he, I don't think, would have been the front runner on the GOP side if there wouldn't have been these renewed investigations and charges and prosecutions into him at all. And so it's just fanning that flame. And what an absolutely ridiculous clip. And I also, Rachel Maddow, I mean, she laughed it off or whatever it is, but she never revisited that question. She's like, let me close with this. After laughing, it's like, no, why would you not follow up? Because Rachel Maddow, I do think she has journalistic chops. Sometimes she chooses to use them. Sometimes she doesn't. You choose to use them. But I think she should have followed up with like, okay, are you serious? Or are you, you know, you've said you're going to spend this money to help other women. Are you not going to do that? But no, she just leaves it, lets her joke about it and moves on. Ridiculous stuff. Okay. Joy Reid, speaking of MSNBC, she was caught on a hot mic saying that Joe Biden is going to start an effing war. Let's listen.
Over the weekend, President Biden said he's ready to take action if Congress is serious about solving the border issue.
If that bill were the law today, I'd shut down the border right now and fix it quickly. And Congress needs to get it done.
Starting another fucking war.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming from my TV days that she thought her mic had been muted during President Biden's clip that they were playing. And clearly it was not. And then she issued an apology. She said, I was chatting during a clip that was playing, and you know, we try to keep the show very PG-13, so I just want to apologize to anyone who was listening to my behind-the-scenes chatter. I deeply, deeply apologize for that. But it also is a little glimpse of how she actually thinks about Joe Biden. She doesn't like Joe Biden. Neither do I think a lot of Democrats. And I mean, you have two wars now in Europe, and you also have what's happening between Israel and Gaza. And so it shows that she thinks he is not capable of the job, and that things he says, things he does, the way he presents himself. Yeah, start another effing war. So Joy Reid unfiltered. Okay, Karine Jean-Pierre had a case of the Bidens. On the news. So President Joe Biden confirmed the attack on U.S. troops in Jordan. And listen to Karine Jean-Pierre when I think she was attempting to honor the fallen soldiers did not go well.
What I will say, our deepest condolences go out, and our heartfelt condolences go out to the families who lost three brave folks who are military folks, who are brave, who are always fighting, who are fighting on behalf and of this administration, of the American people. Obviously, more importantly, we lost those souls.
I don't know. I mean, I feel bad.
That is like, so sad.
That should be something that you have an absolute, you're the White House press secretary, you're the face of the administration. That is something, because there have already been other members of the administration who have been accused of fumbling that story when they're talking about it on the news. I want to say it was a spokesperson. It was Kirby. Who's he a spokesperson for? Was talking about, you know, this is a previous attack where it's like, oh, they're, you know, they have traumatic brain injuries, but nothing serious or something like that. And it's like, wait, what? And that was involving a different attack on American troops. But it's like, what are you guys talking about? Like, why are you trying to downplay it? Just word salad. And this just goes back to Karine Jean-Pierre is such an ineffective spokesperson, because it's like you want to portray strength and like competency, and her and Biden as a team, they don't portray either of those things. It's a real mess. Okay, questions and comments from the live stream before we get to sanity check. But first, I've been talking about, did you see my picture I posted yesterday, Nicole?
Probably. Maybe I missed it.
You don't follow everything I do on Instagram?
Well, I thought I did.
Oh, because I joked with you I was going to post a bikini picture after I lose another 15 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. And so mm-hmm. I took a stock image of a model with mm-hmm. a bikini bottle body and just Photoshop my face to it. But it's a preview of things to come.
Oh, that's what Curly was referring to.
Preview of things to come.
But
what
he
do you
saw
mean?
Your picture on Instagram.
When I went on with him yesterday?
Yes.
No, I did this last night.
Well, he told me that this morning.
Oh, yes.
And said, I saw her on Instagram. She keeps popping up in my Instagram in her little pictures.
Oh, well, I post a lot of pictures on Instagram. But anyway, I'm down 37 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I've been able to maintain it for more than a year now. I'm about to, you know, I've been doing another round of it as well, because I bet Nicole I would post a bikini picture. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, what I think is good about this program is it isn't a magic trick. And I think you just have to be honest about that. When you see some of the things like the quick fixes to weight loss that are being sold out on the market, whether it's like, oh, eat our prepackaged meals. What are you going to do that for life? Take this injection. Are you going to do that for life? And what happens when you stop? And so I think having a program that's just teaching you what to eat in the right portions, real food, you go out, you buy it at the grocery store. You're not giving them money every single month for the rest of your life to be part of their program or eat their shakes. It really is a new way of looking at just getting happy and healthy and feeling good again. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan today. All right, questions and comments on the BLM week in schools next week. Remember, ask questions. If you're a parent and you don't know if this is being taught in your kid's school or what the programs are going to look like associated with it, you have every right in the world to ask questions. Trina Nessler says, postmodernism is worse than Marxism. Stacy says, wait, aren't our students failing academics? All is well, at least we teach them how to be activists. And they are failing. I mean, test scores statewide are atrocious. And of course, the superintendent of public instruction wants to be like, well, test scores aren't everything. Yeah, you would say that when test scores are bad, but I bet you wouldn't say it if test scores were good. Crystal Levine says, the more we continue to identify differences just to treat people differently, we will never grow and treat people equally. 100%. And that's the issue. You're segregating little kids for lunch on the basis of race. I mean, why don't you take us back to the 1950s? Wild. Greg Olakis says, honestly, it's 2024. Why are we actually still talking about color? Oh yeah, the government wants to keep us divided. Not only the government, the media wants to keep you divided as well. This is about division. You can't look at it and say it's about anything else. You have programs that are explicitly dividing people on the basis of race. An us versus them mentality is it's the exact opposite of where we should be as a country after the gains that we have made in this country. Dee says, the lack of a nuclear family structure is what is so damaging to the Black community, and BLM wants more of that? Not shocked. Exactly. On the Kitsap school superintendent who allegedly maybe ripped out yard signs. Apparently she has denied this, but did admit that the truck is hers. So I'm kind of curious, how do you squirm out of this one? It says North Kitsap School District spokesperson Jen Markarian on Friday afternoon told the Kitsap Sun that the district had no information to provide, but the King County Sheriff's Office spokesperson told the Kitsap Sun that Evans, the superintendent, has been questioned. The investigation is ongoing and will be forwarded to the Kitsap County prosecuting attorney for review. So if it's going to be forwarded to prosecutors, obviously they have a prime suspect who they think is guilty of the crime. So we're going to follow up on that. Robert Parker with a $10 super chat. The Yes on NK Bond Committee has not filed their disclosure reports with the PDC. Taxpayers don't know who is funding it and how donations are spent. Well, that's a problem in and of itself. There should be some PDC complaints against that then. On the potential ban, quote unquote, phasing out of natural gas, Deanne Wade said, I'm on Social Security with a gas water heater and dryer. I have no way to absorb the cost of this. Exactly. And that's why that's the simplest question. At the committee hearing, typically, you have a sponsor of the bill who shows up to talk about it, to field any questions. I don't know if that's going to happen tomorrow, but if it does, that's the number one question. How do people pay for this? How do you propose a working class family pays for a cost like this? And they will not have a good answer to that at all. Let's see. H says, we just paid almost $8,000 for our new gas furnace with an air purifier. Mm-hmm. Is it too late to take it back? So can I return this?
Maybe if it's from Costco.
Yeah, I guess. Trina Nessler says, so people will freeze to death if they can't afford to change their furnace. Bob Larson, I agree with this, Bob. Come up with better alternatives first. This is like doing away with gas-powered cars before they have a legitimate option. Electric might be an option in 30 to 40 years, but it's not now. Exactly. Exactly. We just saw the strain on our system, even with alternatives, when we had that last big cold snap. And right after that, they're like, yeah, let's ban natural gas. It's just bad governance. And we see way too much of that. It's policies that haven't been fully thought through, that are done in the name of ideology and of, you know, checking some box. And then it just hurts you and I. And that's the real problem here. Todd Welch says, these horrible stories need to be on every WA GOP ad when running for either re-election or election.
Regarding
the sex offender. Yeah, and then Matthew Cook says, let me guess, the Northwest Bail Fund bailed this guy out. I don't know, but we could find out. Wouldn't surprise me, although he was white. I don't know if they're bailing out white people.
Well, they go after sex offenders. They just let anybody out. They can't afford it. If you're poor, you know.
Yeah, but I think they're probably not wasting the money on Whitey, even if he's a sex offender. All right, good questions and comments per the usual.
Really
again,
quick.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, can I show you?
Please. What do you want to show me? Oh, there it is. Yes, yeah, see?
I found it.
More or less, that's what I plan to look like.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think I'd wear a triangle bikini because I'm a classy lady. It would probably, and not a low rise. Like, it's got to at least be like right below the belly button, you know.
Sure.
So it's going to be elegant. But okay. I was just giving you a preview,
Pretty
Nicole.
Pretty much what it'll be.
It was giving you a preview of things to come.
I missed it. I don't know how.
You like my Photoshop job there? You can hardly tell, right? It's basically like, is that my body?
I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I get real creative with those East Side social media
You're
posts.
You're having a lot of fun.
Why can't I have fun, you know?
No, you absolutely can. Hey, did you also want to do the poll for today? Or do you want to
Yes!
Hang on to
it? Oh my gosh, I do want to do the poll for today. Thanks, Nicole. I love how she asked that. Well, I forgot it right after the BLM story. Speaking of BLM in schools, I made this the subject of our daily show poll today, asking, do you believe that Black Lives Matter in school week should be something that we recognize in Washington public schools? A lot of you saying no, although there's like a healthy 10% on locals right now that are saying yes. Badejo Fam 5 says, enough with pushing agendas on our children. They are creating and fostering more racism in all of our children than just leaving them alone. Terry Lee says, Brandi Cruz, what's the harm? It's Black History Month and everyone needs education in the history of America for all races, sexes, and religions that live in the United States of America. The more you know about the history of America, the better off you are, and you'll probably treat everyone better. The nation is moving toward teaching history that is comfortable to the white population, which won't make the white population feel bad, etc. And this is going to make us as a nation of idiots who don't know their own country's history. And I think she goes on to say there is racial injustice in many areas of society. And I agree with that. But I think we're talking about, okay, how do we teach these lessons to elementary school kids? No one is saying don't teach America's history. I mean, we have a horrible history when it comes to race in this country. That is something. If you don't teach history, history will be repeated. I mean, you look at all the anti-Semitism and the Nazi, sympathizers that are out and about right now and efforts to improve Holocaust education. And so I think it's the same thing. 100%, we need to teach this nation's horrible history around race. But I don't think that the 13 points of the Black Lives Matter movement that have to do with trans ideology and gender ideology and like activism, that's
dismantling the family.
Dismantling the nuclear family. That isn't mm-hmm. what you're talking about here. What you're talking about here is absolutely fine. And that should be part of a organized, structured curriculum that teachers can follow. Yeah. But this is blatantly saying teachers should give their personal opinions to students on the racial equity movement. And that kind of stuff terrifies me.
To just work it into the whole week. And so there's no way for, unless you're going to pull your kid out of class for the whole week, there's no way for parents to monitor what they're being told we're not saying don't teach history, obviously. Yeah. But it's just the way that it's being taught. And at this point, the teachers and staff are not trustworthy.
Yeah. Christian Gentry says on X, if you haven't pulled your kids from the indoctrination machine, you're nuts. But that's the problem is, like, it's hard. It's expensive. What are you going to send them to private school? That's too expensive. If you have two parents working in the home, mm-hmm. then that might be impossible to do. You'd have to quit your job to do it. And so I totally understand that sentiment, but that's why we are so focused on bringing attention to these issues. If it was as simple as like, oh, pull your kids out of school, then it would be like, whatever, that's just not a viable option. But it's the only option for some parents. So we're going to fight to try to make it better. Yeah, and you should too.
Have a conversation with your kid and find out what they're being taught and let them know how you feel about it.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Okay. Good questions and comments today. Thank you very much. Before we get to our closing sanity check, I just want to start it with saying, leave Taylor Swift alone, you bunch of weirdos on the internet. Let's get to it. So I've got a story I'm going to talk about, but this whole Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, like absolute meltdown is driving me nuts. Why do grown adults care so much about this young woman's relationships? And there's like these conspiracies in the conservative corners of the internet that like this is all a ploy so that like Travis Kelce's team is going to win the Super Bowl. And then it's a ploy for those two like to get proposed at this, he's going to propose to her at the Super Bowl, and then they're going to come out together and do a joint endorsement of Joe Biden. Like, this is a legit conspiracy theory on the internet right now. And look, I know a lot of conspiracy theories turn out to be true, but I mean, could this not be that, like, she's a pop star
and she's cute, and he's a cute football player who's really successful, and they just like each other. Can't that be it? And that he's actually really good, and maybe that's why she likes him, because he, and why she even knows who he is, because he's a really good football player. It's just wild. But then on top of the wildness, somebody actually did a poll, because Taylor Swift is obviously a Democrat. I mean, she's been very, she supported Biden the first time he ran. So this is from Como News. 18% of voters more likely to back Taylor Swift endorsed presidential candidate, poll says. Taylor Swift may influence the results of the 2024 presidential election, with nearly 20% of voters saying they are likely to support a candidate endorsed by her. The poll conducted by Redfield and Wilton Strategies shows 18% of voters would align their choice with the singers, according to Newsweek. However, it also shows 17% are less likely to vote for a candidate endorsed by Swift. If you're choosing your candidate based on who Taylor Swift supports, like, please, please diversify your reading materials a little bit. But I do understand that if you've got young kids who are like, maybe this is their first presidential election, and they're hearing from, are you telling me to smooth my hair? Oh, Nicole's giving me a little.
Sorry, that was me. My
sometimes
hair
when my hair
out.
Is crazy, she goes over there, she's like, fix
I do.
It, fix it. I thought that was a.
Sorry.
Okay. No, that's all right.
I interrupted your
that's okay.
spiel there.
Look, if you're trying to, if it's your first election and like you've been soaking in Taylor Swift gloriousness for the last 5 years, and Taylor Swift says, I'm supporting Joe Biden and here's why. Yeah, I get that. But if you're an adult, like if you're over the age of 20 and your vote is being influenced one way or the other by Taylor Swift, that's insane.
And all right, her whole career is based off of her bad luck with men, bad judgment of men.
Yeah, so maybe she's got a bad judgment of Joe Biden. I don't know if I'd trust that very much. Crazy. A reminder, please join us on Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. on the steps of the Washington State Capitol. We need a show of force to remind lawmakers who they work for and to remind them that there are real people, real faces, real voters behind these six initiatives. All we're asking for are hearings. That doesn't mean you have to pass them. That doesn't mean you have to enact them into law. We know that you're not going to do that. But show a little respect to the 800,000 voters who signed on to at least one of these initiatives, and allow them to come to Olympia and testify in front of you about why they are supporting them and why some of your policies have been so detrimental to their lives. So 3:30 p.m., make it happen. Please make it happen on Wednesday, steps of the Washington State Capitol. Bring your umbrellas, by the way. Nicole, you bring your umbrella too. Actually, I'm going to stand there in the rain, because that's dramatic, right? Give us just hearings! Yeah. Hear the bills with my mascara just down my face.
You look like Braveheart.
All right, can I make a pitch to the merch store? You know what we restocked? We restocked the red Make Common Sense Again, Great Again hats.
Yes.
By popular demand, we have 35 of them in the store right now, and I'm not restocking them again. I restocked them for Roanoke. We sold a few of them. We've got some left. UndividedPod.com, shop our merch store. If you're a subscriber, remember, you do have a secret promo code you can use for $5 off. You should have it in your inbox. If you don't ask me for it, take advantage of your promo code. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Reminder, in the comments of this episode, I will have a place if you want to sign up to testify against or for. I don't care how you testify. If you're for the bill that would ban natural gas, more power to you. You can use the link to sign up to testify as well. So that'll be in the comments. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. Oh, that was flat. Oh, am I still on? Okay.